My name is Preston Coyner. I grew up on the 1100 block of Baptist Fifth Avenue. I lived there from April the 10th, 1940 to July 1st, 1960. And the July 1st is significant because I got married the next day and we moved into an apartment elsewhere. I'm a native and lifelong resident of Charlottesville and was in the county for a little while. Never went away to college, never went away to war. And the longest continuous period that I've been away from Charlottesville is 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that I'm a homebody, but 2 weeks away from Charlottesville is about all I can stand. Oh. I need to get back. I guess everyone who went to Clark for the first 40 years of his existence knew of Ms. Buford, who was a principal. She was a woman that was loved, hated, feared, respected, all those things rolled into one. Probably an amateur psychologist. Ms. Buford did rule with what some might call an iron hand, but it was really a wooden paddle. She did paddle people. There were certainly legends that circulated. If you needed just a little paddle, she'd put your name on the paddle with a pencil. And she spanked you until you couldn't read it. And the other legend was, if you were really bad, she put it on her with ink. And Ms. Buford's been dead and gone a lot of years. But 2 years ago, I found out who had her paddle. And he brought it to a group meeting. And indeed, there are names written on it, both pencil and ink. But they are still very visible. The Belmont that I grew up in was considerably different than today's Belmont. Our section of Belmont was Big Hill. Downtown Belmont, the word downtown didn't exist then for Belmont, but everyone knew where Big Hill was. And Big Hill sort of started at Montrose and went to Druid. Uh-huh. And when we first got bus service into Belmont, they used to put bus names in canvas, and they had a crank. They would crank the canvas around for the destinations. And the one for Big Hill said Big Hill. And one of our neighbors who lived on Elliott Avenue was, we considered her a little bit snooty, and she didn't like that term, Big Hill. So she petitioned to change the name of the neighborhood to Belmont Heights. And then it became a city neighborhood, and there was only bus. It's Belmont Heights. It's not Big Hill anymore. 3 years ago, we had the second annual reunion of the Belmont Boys. The only women allowed are the waitresses who cook the food. But we had 96 people, and we had 96 last year, and we held it yesterday, and we had 131 people. And everyone had a connection with Belmont, and we ran in age probably from the mid-50s to the late 80s. It's a good opportunity to get together and, you know, tell some lies and swap some stories. The old bridge always had a meaning to me, because we walked so much as kids, and, you know, we probably weren't allowed to come downtown by ourselves until we were 7 or 8 years old. Unlike today, when, you know, we don't allow our children to run around like, you know, some of us did. But even as a kid, you always sensed when you got to the bridge, you had arrived. You were at downtown, and, you know, the bridge was narrow, it was somewhat rickety, you know, but as kids, that didn't have any meaning, you know, it was just a thing. One really bad memory I have of the Belmont Bridge, when I was, I'm going to guess, maybe 7 years old, someone who was about 8 or 10 years older than me, we were walking together, and we got to the very peak of the bridge. And he grabbed me and dangled me over the side, holding me by my legs, And I had a fear of heights before that, and that fear suddenly increased. And Mr. Carter's shop was next to where the barbecue restaurant is. Mm-hmm. And it was this true old typical, stereotypical male barbershop, one chair. And it was a somewhat dilapidated building, but haircuts were cheap. And I'm still saving up for one. It was a little rectangular building, and he heated it with a coal-fired stove. And his coal bin was behind the mirror, behind all of the shampoos, and Mr. Carter chewed tobacco. So when he'd be cutting hair, he'd open the door, and he'd always spit back into the into the coal bin, and it seemed to be a nasty habit. But one thing that I always criticized him for is, you know, there was a time when you went to the barber, you just went, you didn't make an appointment, so you know first in, you know, first out. But Mr. Carter always felt that older men should get their hair cut before kids. So as a kid, if you were next, then Mr. Carter said, "Boy, you sit down, I want to take so-and-so." So sometimes a trip to the barber would take a couple of hours, and, you know, it developed some things. You heard a lot of lies. I won't say we got sex education, but we wondered a lot. You know, it was just a place that a lot of the adult men, they just hang out there. You just, there's nothing else to do. You just go in the barbershop, and it's the same boy that dangled me off of the Belmont Bridge. He lived next door to where I lived. We were building a chicken coop or something, and we didn't have any staple nails. But this grocery store sold nails. They have kegs of nails sitting around. So he told me to go down to the store and sit on one of the kegs, and when nobody's looking, just reach down and get a handful of staples. And I did. I was successful. At least I thought I was successful. So 3 minutes later when I got home, and someone at home already knew that I stole his nails. I don't know how. I was probably 6 or 7 years old, but I found it the hard way that you're not supposed to take nails when they're painful. But I like to say I got red-shirted. I used to say I had an academic issue and didn't graduate till 59, but red-shirted sounds. The good thing about my not graduating the year that I was supposed to was I met the woman that I married the next year in school. And we've been together 52 years, so, you know, faith works in strange ways. We were exposed to kids from McGuffey and Venable, like, once a year when they had a, quote, field day. The three schools would compete, like, in a track meet, and that was the only interaction that I had. And I think we always felt that the other schools were superior to us, that Belmont was not the place to live, and we were south of the track. Even then, we just felt, I don't want to use the word second class. We, you know, all the families, pretty much all the families were, you know, blue collar, they weren't any professionals. You know, I gave my wife went to Venable, and I give her a lot of grief because, you know, she went to Venable, and Venable was next to UVA, and it meant...
Well, you married up.
Yeah, I married up. And even more
she's
impressive.
Well,
the first time I went to pick up on a date, her father had their address on the board nailed on a tree, and I thought, that's uptown, man. That's high cotton. But I was the last segregated class at Lane.
And then they closed the school after that?
No, they closed it while I was my senior year. During so-called massive resistance, when they closed Lane and Venable, it disrupted a lot of white kids.
It did.
Because when they closed Lane, it took a few weeks for people to figure out what the hell to do. The kids went to Waynesboro, they went to Scottsville, and then they formed the Charlottesville Educational Foundation. And I went to school at the Elks Lodge, First Methodist Church, Friar Springs, Institute of Textile Technology was available. Mm-hmm. And
was that like a year?
No, it was from September to right after Christmas break. Oh,
I see.
But it was kind of interesting because the Lane football team played football, wow, although the school was closed.
Huh.
We had the same teachers. But again, I think so much of it to me was I didn't know what was going on and wasn't savvy enough to try to figure it out. A lot of young people will be critical of me and my people, my generation. Well, why didn't you do something? You know,
no,
but
yeah.
You just,
yeah.
It was the way it was, you know. It's like, you know, why didn't we all buy Apple stock at $3? You know, you didn't have $3. I sometimes feel like I should apologize for not having done something.
You couldn't have.
You know, one person can, you know, change the system, but...
Before I got here, did you discuss, mention the most famous building? It wasn't exactly in Belmont, but was close enough to it.
What's in?
Margaritas?
No, we didn't talk about it. Are any or all of you familiar with quote Marguerite?
No.
Marguerite was the house of Hilda Keith.
That's what I think.
It's down on 3rd Street, and I've got a great photograph of the house taken in the 1930s, and it was a fine home. She was a madam, and I don't know if she was also an entertainer or not, but she was a madam, and no one really knows what nationality she was. She was dark-complected, but she was not an African-American. But Marguerite was raided, and she went to court, and supposedly the judge had been a customer of hers, a client, but the real history of it is in the 70s when they did the urban renewal down here, and when they started demolishing the house, there was money everywhere, and hidden in the walls, and in boxes in the yard. It made international news for several months. But supposedly, when they took the bulldozer and started shoving it over, money was flying in the air.
Mm.
So they stopped demolition and then started digging, because I don't know what day of the week it was, but I have a vivid memory of that Sunday morning, my wife and I and daughters were on the way to her mother's for Sunday dinner. And I had the radio on, and there was a black church, a sermon, you know, broadcast from this black church. And the preacher, at some point, he said, "We're going to end this sermon a little bit early today." He said, "I'm going home, get me a shovel, and I'm going down Marguerite's." That was it's funny. I sat on the Board of Architectural Review, and I hope I've got 3.5 more years, and I hope I'm there when we do the new bridge. It's something I'm sort of dreading and looking forward to at the same time.